Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to The Rose Colombo, right here at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Again, this is The Rose Colombo, right here for you. Over on the sunny side of the country in the West Coast. And I want to wish you a happy Wednesday. And I'm glad to be here with you today, and I'm glad you're here with me. I do want to say how sad to have heard the shocking news about Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter and seven other passengers aboard the helicopter that crashed on a hillside here in Calabasas, California, due to heavy fog, it appears. And I had read that their helicopter did not have any warning equipment for terrain and fog. So it was a very, very sad day when we heard that tragedy on the news. But he is still a household name, and he will always be a household name. And he was a star basketball player who will be missed by millions of his fans. And mainly, I want to say that we should remember his family and the families who lost loved ones in that tragedy and pray for them, and that they will eventually have comfort knowing that they are with the Lord in heaven. And that is always comforting to those of us who have lost loved ones. Prayers are powerful. On another note, as you know, the Senate impeachment trials are coming close to an end, hopefully. The next step would be to vote and by the Senate and House and send this nightmare for America to an end. And I believe that the American people want to move on from this impeachment hearing that has lasted way too long and cost the taxpayers way too much money, millions and millions of dollars. Well, we have so many important issues that are affecting average Americans every single day, working Americans every single day, the elderly, the sick, the chronically ill. We have the coronavirus to deal with. It's that time of the year when influenza is spreading. So we have a lot of issues such as homelessness and hungry children and open borders and illegal migration and on and on and on. Issues that concern every legal American in the USA and our taxes. And it affects the cost of living, electricity, gas, water, housing costs, travel. I mean, it affects everything when these issues are out of control and not being taken care of because they're so busy with the impeachment inquiry and hearings for far too long. I think the American people are really sick and tired of it and just want it to go away and move on to the real issues that are affecting their everyday lives. And today, just to let you know, we will be entering again, as we do every Wednesday, into the world of authors and experts with a very fabulous guest. She is an attorney and an author. Her name is Louise Schwartz. She will share her novel that is hot off the press, Murder in Montecito. Everyone enjoys a good murder mystery, and Murder in Montecito has received rave reviews. So you won't want to miss this interview with our very special guest. I'm going to take a little break and for an important message, and then we'll return to Columbo Chronicles Live with our very special guest, and I'll tell you a little more about her in just a moment. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite at the Horseshoe Cafe over in Benson, where it's at the crossroads of Tucson, Phoenix, Sierra Vista, Bisbee, and Tombstone. Have you ever been to Tombstone? Tombstone's a fun place, especially when they're having theatricals going on and celebrations, and it's really fun. I was lucky I hit it on that particular day with my sister, and we really had a lot of fun with all the cowboys and cowgirls out there.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Well, listen up, everyone, because now we have a really special guest. Her name is Louise Schwartz. She's the author of the popular and controversial Montecito murder mystery novel. It is a novel, and it is an award-winning novel, an Irwin Award-winning novel, and it is an articulate, well-informed, emphatic. She is an articulate, well-informed, emphatic Los Angeles attorney, a passionate advocate for the environment and civil rights. Louise Schwartz became a dedicated and successful volunteer for CASA, the court-appointed special advocates. She was a court-appointed special advocate for a foster child from age 4 to 18, and in 2014, Louise was honored with CASA, Los Angeles Volunteer of the Year. It's an award for her loving efforts on behalf of abused and neglected children. I think that is very, very important to mention. And also, Louise grew up in Montecito, California, near Santa Barbara. And I believe that's where Oprah lives as well, the oldest of four children raised by a single mom on Miramar Beach. Scholarships got Louise out of Santa Barbara to boarding school in Connecticut at 14 and to Stanford University, where she graduated with a degree in English. A short time later, Louise moved to Washington, D.C. to attend Georgetown University, where she earned her law degree. Back home in Santa Barbara, she passed the bar and began her busy law practice, specializing in real estate, environmental, and family law, one of my favorite topics. And now she is the author of an Irwin Award-winning novel, Murder in Montecito. So let's get started, and let's say hello to our very special guest, Louise Schwartz. Hi, Louise. How are you today?
Hello. Very well, thank you.
Oh, good. I am so happy to have you on Colombo Chronicles to talk to our audience, because everyone is interested, mostly everyone is always interested and intrigued by murder, mystery, crime, and so forth. I don't know what that is about us, but we do enjoy it. So, Louise, to start off with, I know that Montecito is one of the most beautiful cities in the United States of America, and you grew up there. Are you still living there, and how's the weather today?
Oh, no, I live in Los Angeles now. I moved down here when I'm married, and the weather here is clear and windy and probably in the low 70s, high 60s weather in Los Angeles, and Santa Barbara's probably about the same.
Yes, it's such a beautiful area. You're very fortunate to have grew up there. And before we get started with your Irwin Award-winning novel, Murder in Montecito, I wanted to ask you about CASA, if you could explain a little bit to the audience about CASA and your involvement and how you were honored with the award. And also, it's important because maybe somebody out there might need that information. And so if you could just touch on that a bit, I would appreciate that.
It's a wonderful organization that was started by a judge in Portland who realized he was making decisions about children's lives. These are children who've been put into the court system because of neglect or abuse at home. So they're essentially under the court's jurisdiction, and he realized he needed more information. And so he reached out to the community to help him gather that information. And now it's a nationwide organization, and we have the power to look at all the records of the child. Our job is to make sure that the children are getting the support they need, all the services they need, and we write a report for the court to tell the court what's happening with the child, so the court is able to make an informed decision about the child. It's a volunteer organization. It has very definite rules, which makes it, I think, easier to work with. You're not allowed to bring the child home. You're not allowed to introduce the child to your family. You keep a professional distance. And at the same time, you're what is essentially a parent's eye to make sure the child is getting what he or she needs. And in my case, I started working with a little boy when he was 4. He went through, I haven't even counted, probably 8 foster homes. The rule is you have to visit once a month, and I did a lot more than that. And I think I've been the most consistent person in this guy's life, and I really love him, and he's now an adult, and he has a place to live, and I think he's doing pretty well. And it's a great organization. Anybody who loves children and has some time, it's a wonderful thing to do. I think in some states it's called being a guardian ad litem, but I'm not sure how if the CASA program's in every state, but it's in most of them. It's a national organization.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for all your hard work and your volunteer work and helping a young child feel some security and self-esteem in his life. And security, that's so important. So many children, don't have that, and it's important to let people know that CASA is something they can Google and investigate on their own, do their own research online now. Thank you so much for that and sharing
you're welcome.
That. And so you were an attorney, and now
yes.
you've turned to an award-winning author, and
yeah.
you wrote a book about crime, which doesn't surprise me since you're an attorney.
well.
So what inspired you?
Well,
I
was inspired by my hometown because of the beauty and wanting to somehow express that. So I was writing a novel about a family in Montecito when my husband said to me, "Oh, kill the husband." So that changed the tenor of the book quite a bit and turned into a murder mystery rather than a family saga. So it was mainly trying to express the beauty of Montecito as well as the complexity of the history, because I spent a lot of time on the East Coast and nobody realized how, or that's not fair, but lots of people didn't realize how fascinating California history is. And Santa Barbara is especially interesting. So I wanted to get that into the novel as well. Then I also wanted to put in the local indigenous people, the Chumash. I wanted to talk about their history within the history of the Spanish, the Mexicans, the Anglos. It's complicated and fascinating, I think.
Well, it absolutely is, and I don't know anyone else that wrote about that, so I think that is very fascinating and new to our ears and to our eyes, so I think that's going to play a big part. So we know now why you decided to write about murder.
Kill the husband. Yeah.
I think that is a wonderful story right in itself. And so who is the main character in your book, and what is your character like?
The main character is a young woman called Emma, who's a young widow now, and she goes back to the town where her mother would dump her throughout her life and goes back to her grandmother's house and lives with her, trying to get over the loss of her, or deal with the loss of her husband, and also trying to figure out who murdered him. And she finds a job with a local woman whose husband has a storehouse full of research he did on the local Indians. And the woman wants the papers organized, so she finds that job and organizes the papers, and at the same time discovers who killed her husband, essentially.
Wow, just by organizing the papers.
Well,
that's interesting.
And meeting local people, yeah, finding people.
The reason I found that fascinating is because I have a friend who actually had her mother's husband pass away, and there was under suspicious circumstances, since you're a lawyer.
Oh, no.
And then
yeah.
the mother died, and then when she was going through the papers,
uh-huh.
she actually found out a lot of information that people didn't know, and she turned it into a book. So that was very
uh-huh.
interesting that you added that little, because it really does happen in real life, apparently.
yeah.
Go ahead.
There's an actual researcher who I've loosely based my character on, or the character who had collected all the papers, and his papers, graduate students are still going through them because they were such a mess. So it's based on a real person, Mr. Harrington, whose papers are in the Smithsonian and the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum and who went around interviewing Indians all over the state, certainly, and maybe all over the country.
Wow. So your character, Emma, right? Emma?
Yes.
What's her name? Emma.
Yep.
And her husband was Harry?
Right.
Okay, so she's at home with her grandmother, right? And So was her life what was her life like? Was she a person of privilege and secrecy, or what was she like? What was her background?
She definitely one of privilege. She the daughter of a mother who married five times or more and who pretty much just ignored her. And she and her grandmother are very close. And her grandmother lives in a house based on a real house in Montecito, a beautiful place. And the grandmother, again, is someone of privilege, but doesn't... They aren't... She, as I say in the book, she relies on a bank in Chicago doling out a little bit of money to her. So it's not like she's cash rich, but she lives in a house with a beautiful garden. And so it's definitely a story of privileged people and how they behave.
And so Emma meets the family's tied to some land. What did that land, why did the land have a significance to Emma?
The only thing real in the book are the places. So for me, mm-hmm. the places meant a lot. And for Emma, it was more being home with her grandmother, who she loves, though they're pretty reserved together. And then she finds a job at the house of a woman who also has a big place. Montecito has, its history is one of people with big estates. And so that's where the novel takes place, is on these different big estates.
Yes, it's like a fairyland when you drive through Montecito.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's beautiful. And so does she eventually, is there like love and sex and involved in
yep.
your novel?
Yep. Sex and violence. Yes, she has an affair with the son of her boss. And there's sex. I wrote it a long time ago, and at least the sex scenes a long time ago. Now they sort of embarrass me because I'm now closer in age to the grandmother. The grandmother became a much richer subject over the years. This book took me a long time to write.
Yes, people don't realize how long a book, for most people who do research and then, you know, write and rewrite and then edit and send it out. It's a lot of tedious work when you're doing a work of passion that you love.
Yeah.
And so I'm not even going to ask you if she finds out about the who murdered her husband,
uh-huh.
because I'll leave that for people to read.
Yeah.
But almost every book has to have some sex in it because, you know, it's just, you know, that's what movies are made out of, right? Sex,
yeah.
violence, crimes.
And that's what's fun to read.
And so... Did she ever find out, like, any, just let me ask you this, does she ever find
uh-huh.
out about any types of real secrets that involve government or anything, like, you know, sinister-like?
No. It's not government. It's more society that protects its own and doesn't want to. No, she doesn't. You know, it's all mm-hmm. pretty personal and local. Doesn't get into big ideas. You know, national or state conspiracy. No.
Just societal.
Exactly.
Okay. So, does she get involved with the police at all?
Yes, there's a detective who she talks to and gives the information she discovers to, and does he help her? I guess he helps her feel less alone in this world that's pretty much new to her. And so there's a detective character who I like.
And what is he like?
He's, handsome Latino, mm-hmm. local guy, a surfer, a horse show fellow. He's well connected locally and is a conscientious detective, conscientious guy.
How did she get to meet him, and why did he find a connection to help her?
She meets him through both her grandmother and the woman she's working for know him and his family, and she's first given a detective who is one of the ones who covers things up. And so both of the old ladies in her life say, no, you have to get this guy. So she starts talking to him, and he comes onto the case, the good detective.
Oh, he's a good detective. Well, that's good to
know. Yeah.
And so some of your characters, do you think that most of the audience can connect with your characters in your book?
You know, I don't know, because I don't know the audience. I think it's not fashionable these days to write about people of privilege, so I'm not sure. I don't know. I think
though that people are very interested in people that are of privilege because, you know, I mean, they make so many movies now, series, and people watch those series because they're curious people. You know, they almost live secretly,
yeah.
like you said in your book. It's kind
right.
of like a very close secret, like
yeah.
she lived with her grandmother of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the average person who doesn't live that lifestyle finds it fascinating.
Yeah, I hope so. And also it's a story of the cult, the local culture. So if people are interested in California culture, that's what it's about. It's also my Emma is somebody who's dealt with dealt with sexual violence or, you know, sexual with predatory stepfathers, let's put it that way. So people who are interested in what young women have to deal with in the world might also be interested in it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big topic today. That's a hot topic
it
right
is.
Now. And I mean, it was a hot topic. It was a problem for years, as you know, as
yeah.
a lawyer and who dealt with family law, but nobody paid attention.
Right.
And so, yes, people are very interested in that today because it's more out in the open and more people are starting to get on board and talk about these issues.
Right.
Whereas in the past, it was suppressed. So I think it's very important that you did add that to your book. I think that'll draw even more females to reading the book, in fact. And so as an attorney, you were also interested in the environment. So did your career as an attorney and concerns about the environment have anything to do with choosing Montecito?
As a setting, well, probably because it is so beautiful. And my sister-in-law, Naomi Schwartz, was the county supervisor up there for Montecito and Carpinteria, who worked very hard to keep it beautiful. And it matters a lot that people work hard to save the beauty of their natural surroundings. And so I wanted to try to express that beauty, try to describe it so people cared and could see it.
And so are you still working as a lawyer, or are you going to pursue your writing career and write more books?
I became a lawyer because I was a writer and loved words, and I thought it was a way to sort of be a plumber with words. And so I've been writing all along. Now I'm focused just on the writing. And right now I'm writing a children's book.
Oh,
trying
very
to get
good.
out of the world of sex and violence and write a children's book.
Well, so are you going to pursue a screenplay for TV or for the movies?
I would love to, but that's not really up to me. We're trying to get the book out to people who might be interested, and if they are, that would be wonderful. I don't have my hopes up, however. I mean, yes,
oh, well,
I do.
Oh, well, get your hopes up.
Yes, I do.
You never know. Life is filled with surprises.
right.
And so do you have any events coming up, like book signings or any of that at the present time?
Yes, we're trying to plan a book signing up in Santa Barbara and possibly a book party down here in Los Angeles. Things are in the works for that.
Okay, and will that be will that information be available online on a website you might have?
Yes, there is a website for the novel called murderinmontecito.com, and the information will be there.
Oh, great. Okay, so well, it was really a pleasure and fun talking to you, Louise Schwartz, award-winning author, Irwin Award-winning author of Murder in Montecito with Sex and Violence and all sorts of intriguing things happening in the book. So now's your time to shine. And Louise, you are welcome to send any message you want about your book, yourself, to our audience, and also any websites, any contact information, and how to purchase your book and where they can buy it.
Okay, well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a pleasure. And there is a website called murderinmontecito.com. I hope people read the book and care about the culture out here, the culture in California, the culture in Montecito, the beauty, the complexity, the deep culture, especially the local Chumash and the local Californios, and realize how rich the history is in California.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. And where can they buy your book?
Oh, right. Thanks. It's on Amazon, Apple, and Barnes & Noble online. And Chaucer's, the great bookstore in Santa Barbara, has it for sale. and they can order it through their local bookstore.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so we just want to thank you so much, Luis Swartz, attorney and author of Murder in Montecito, and we wish you much success with your book and your new children's book coming up. We'll want to hear about that, so maybe we'll talk to you again in the future.
Great.
So thank you so much for being our guest on Columbo Chronicles, and much success. And we'll look forward to hearing about those book signings.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
And Luis Swartz has left the building, and I hope you go out and check it out online, Amazon.com, Murder in Montecito. It is an intriguing book, and it has a lot of information about the beauty of Montecito, Santa Barbara. And, you know, President Ronald Reagan, I don't know if he still owns, his estate owns the ranch, but he had a ranch, may still have it, in Santa Barbara. And also, I believe Oprah has a home in Santa Barbara as well. But it's a beautiful area, and you can learn more about the environment and the background of Montecito while you're reading an intriguing book on murder, crime, sex, and mystery. So on that note, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll enter into the world of political issues of the day. We'll be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up because you're listening to The Rose, Rose Columbo. And we're going to talk about the issues of the day. And one of the issues of the day that popped up for me is an article on State Department Watch. It's Smoking Gun, Adam Schiff, directly connected to $7.4 billion, that's billion with a B, not M, but a B, billion Burisma corruption scandal, details developing. And this article is intriguing considering that he is heading up the Burisma Ukraine impeachment inquiry, and now the Senate is heading up the hearing. Now, the House already had their opportunity forever and ever to call all the witnesses in the world they wanted to call. They would not allow the President of the United States to have a defense lawyer. They would not allow him to have due process of law. They would not allow him and his GOP representatives to call witnesses, ask questions. And they had their day, days and days and days, all set the way they wanted to run the show, which was all partisan and prejudice against the President of the United States because, in my opinion, this is an impeachment based on hate for the President of the United States and his family and Trump supporters. They have called the Trump supporters deplorables, foolish, stupid, ignorant, small-minded, drudges, easily tricked, and also said that we're ignorant and that we do not deserve or are capable of thinking for ourselves, and therefore we are not capable of choosing the President of the United States of America by fair elections, and therefore they are going to decide who should be the President of the United States. As we know, they were extremely angry when Hillary Clinton lost. Well, we've been doing this for, 243 years or so, at least 150 or so, where we, the people, elect our presidents of the United States, and we use our vote to make that decision. And these are temporary, are supposed to be temporary public servants who swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, which they are trampling upon, which requires under the First Amendment due process of law for every legal American, including the President of the United States. They also did this to Judge Kavanaugh. Denied him due process of law. They said he was guilty without any evidence. So this is a very dangerous path that the left is taking that not only affects Republicans, but affects Democrats, affects all Americans, affects the Constitution adversely. Wipes out the Constitution. If you'd wipe out due process of law, you're wiping out justice. You might as well just send the Department of Justice home so that we don't have to continue to pay them taxpayer-funded money for life if we no longer have any due process of law or justice and fairness in this country. I mean, we will, you know, that's like wiping out a decision by a judge who they disagree with. That's like wiping out the decision of a jury, which there are legal methods to do that, which are called appeals. But still, you're talking about due process of law being intact. You cannot do that. You cannot appeal if you do not have due process of law intact. Due process of law is what sets America as an exceptional nation from tyranny, totalitarian laws, from communism, socialism, Muslim Brotherhood ideologies. They all deny due process of law for their citizens. They all want to control the masses. They want to control you. China wants to control the thoughts of their citizens. They want to control the thoughts of the world through AI techniques that are brought from the United States of America, created. But nothing should be created in the United States of America that denies freedom to think. Freedom of will, freedom of choice, due process of law for all citizens in the world. Sociopaths and psychopaths believe that they have the power to deny freedom, liberty, rights, God, crosses, freedom of religion to Christians, Jews, or others. They persecute Christians and Jews around the world. We're in a very dangerous time in our country that either we're going to uphold the United States Constitution that was created, approved, and signed by the framers at great risk to their lives. They were martyrs. And to the American people who approved it at that time and have approved it for 243 years. And what it does, as I stated in my book, Fight Back Legal Abuse, the country evolved into a three-tier justice system in the 60s, one for the rich, one for the middle class, and one for the poor. But after the new millennium, it evolved into a two-tier justice system, one for the rich and one for everyone else. And as they continue, the corruption, the financial corruption of ripping off the taxpayers to make themselves and their families wealthy through funneling tax dollars to pay to play with foreign enemy nations and putting their kids on boards of directors in corrupted nations with corrupted companies who and then promising them that country that we're going to send billions of dollars to their country, we have to ask the question, are they getting kickbacks from our tax dollars? Are we paying for our own demise and for their wealth to create family dynasties while they destroy the economic status of this country by flooding us with unidentified foreigners who are illegally flowing in or walked across the borders by the left for 10 years now, much longer, but it accelerated in the past 10 years. And while we are killing off the natural-born American babies, over 350,000 U.S. natural-born babies needed to preserve the future of this nation and the Constitution of the USA, the civilization and the culture and the sovereignty of this nation, were snuffed out by abortion scissors. And now the left wants to kill babies at birth and after birth, which is called infanticide. Well, the foreigners, they migrate into this country, overpopulate. They don't take contraceptives. They do not get abortions. But they're convincing the young American women to abort their babies, even at birth or after birth. How does that not equate to murder by abortionists and Planned Parenthood? If you were to take and kill your baby, you would go to prison and maybe get the death sentence. But they don't. They get money. They get big profits from mandated taxpayer-funded abortions from us. We're having to pay to kill our own natural-born American babies. And we're worried about, which we should be, bugs that are about to be extinct, or an animal or a fish that's about to be extinct, or a bird. These are human beings. What if you were to pile up 350,000 babies each year? How high would that be? I am so sad to see our country paying to slaughter 350,000 or more babies every year who would be here with us today to help preserve our nation, to grow up in the United States of America in a blessed country and live their lives and be whoever they want to be and do whatever they want to do because they're snuffed out for profit, for research, for experiments, for organs, human organs, for tissue, human tissue. I don't know how anybody thinks that's not evil. I personally think it's very evil. Shame on the men and women in black who allow this to happen in the United States of America. Who are we? We were the country who was the most civilized in the nation. We were the country who believed in morals, principles, values, and rights of the individuals, including the right to life for the babies, American babies. Well, we are not going to be able to maintain and preserve our nation if we continue to keep the borders open and we continue to allow anchor babies and we continue to migrate third world countries who have run out of land because they overpopulate, and they will overpopulate in this nation as well. We will be the minority. We will be a banana republic. You can already see the tent cities popping up under the Democrat Party. You can see it in any Democrat state. Thank God that President Trump has lifted up the Black American communities, the Hispanic communities, the Asian communities, and all communities in this country who are now employed. They have jobs because he's bringing back jobs from foreign nations that were outsourced. He's bringing back our manufacturing companies that were outsourced for 25 or more years to communist nations. So this impeachment inquiry and then the Senate impeachment hearings should come to an end. We have serious problems. We have tent cities. We have tent cities that are in parts of L.A. that have rats, typhoid. These people are homeless. They're walking around poop and needles. Poop spreads diseases. There needs to be a solution. And you can't have a solution when the people who represent cities like L.A. and San Francisco and states like California or cities like Chicago, Baltimore, New Orleans, Portland, Seattle, that were beautiful cities, and now are turned into tent cities, ghettos, in the United States of America. It's unbelievable. This article says, Gateway Pundit, as reported on Wednesday, the head of Burisma Holdings was indicted this week in the Ukraine. Anybody talking about that? The head of Burisma Holdings was indicted this week in the Ukraine. I believe the President of the United States has the duty, the obligation to ask questions. Where is our taxpayer money being sent, and what is it being spent on? What programs is it supposed to be helping? Or is it going to be used for corruption and kickbacks? What pay to play? Whatever. It is his obligation, Democrat, Independent, Republican, whoever the President of the United States is, it is their obligation to make sure our hard-earned tax dollars that we worked for are be taken out of our paychecks every week is not being spent on corrupted countries, sent to corrupted leaders. That's his duty, his obligation. How ridiculous to think that the President of the United States can't be concerned about where I'm signing off on this $1 billion to send over to where? To some corrupted country so they can use it against us? Like Iran, who threatened to wipe out Israel and wipe out the United States of America for decades, generations? That's their goal, to wipe us out, but they'll take our money. that makes no sense, no logic, and it should not be allowed to happen in the United States of America. Where is the oversight? President Trump was exercising oversight. Oh, so that's a crime now? Exercising oversight with no intent of corruption, just exercising oversight. Where's the intent of corruption there in a phone call? Anyway, as I said, on Wednesday, the head of Burisma Holdings was indicted this week in the Ukraine. Ukrainian prosecutor general indicted Burisma owner Nikola Zhilovsky. The claim alleges that Hunter Biden and his partners received $16.5 million over several years of their services in the Ukraine. Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, took a lucrative post on the Burisma board in 2014. That was not under Trump's era. Hunter Biden was making millions from the corrupt Ukrainian oil and gas company. New memos released earlier this month revealed Burisma Holdings, Hunter Biden's Ukrainian natural gas company, pressured the Obama State Department to help end the corruption investigation during the 2016 election cycle, just 1 month before then Vice President Joe Biden forced Ukraine to fire Viktor Shokin, the prosecutor probing his son Hunter. What would happen in the United States of America if a Ukrainian leader came here to the USA and we were investigating one of theirs and demanded that we fire our prosecutor or else? What would happen? It wouldn't happen, would it? Joe Biden bragged about getting Viktor Shokin fired during a 2018 speech to the Council on Foreign Relations, which you can see on video online. The media immediately covered for Biden and said his targeting of Mr. Shokin was totally unrelated to the prosecutor's corruption investigation into Hunter and Burisma's holdings. Burisma Holdings actually name-dropped Hunter Biden when requesting help from the State Department. According to CD Media last week, former Ukrainian official Oleskar Onyshenko said Hunter Biden was receiving, quote, off the books, unquote, payments from Burisma in the millions. He was sitting on the board of directors of Burisma and collecting millions of dollars. Who wouldn't want that job, right? Earlier this month, the chief of Burisma Holdings was indicted in Ukraine. He has gone missing. Isn't that interesting? Now this. Democrat Adam Schiff is linked to both U.S. corporations named in the $7.4 billion corruption case. The chair of this impeachment investigation, Democrat Adam Schiff, is linked to both United States corporations named in the $7.4 billion corruption case, Method reported. This is on State Department Watch. You can read it for yourself. Schiff is connected to both BlackRock and Franklin Templeton Investments, two companies that were named in the $7.4 billion Burisma U.S.-Ukraine corruption claim that was announced. And Nancy Pelosi's son was on the board of directors of Ukraine's Vyskoil Energy Corporation, and they were both in a commercial promoting Vyskoil while she was a representative or speaker of the House in the Congress. Very interesting how their sons were tied to the Ukraine and these energy companies, along with Kerry's stepson and another person that were involved with Hunter Biden and a company that they owned. And it was Kerry's stepson who said he was distancing himself from anything that Hunter Biden was involved with Burisma and the Ukraine, whatever that meant. So will Adam Schiff and Democrats call this $7-plus billion corporation case a conspiracy too? Someone needs to get Schiff on the record for his ties to these two companies. This is reported on thegatewaypundit.com. You can look it up and read it for yourself and come to your own conclusions, your own thoughts about how our country, in my opinion, has been ripped off for years of our tax dollars, along with being funneled by many over the years past and current, or making pay-to-play deals, making themselves and their families extremely wealthy, creating family dynasties, while overtaxing the American people and reducing our lifestyle, forcing Americans to be enslaved to millions of unidentified third world people, and 73% of illegals are on welfare, living off our tax dollars, living off of us, our tax dollars, and 93% of the radicals from the Middle East are living off our tax dollars. And there's another thousands coming towards Mexico to come through Mexico as I speak right now, trying to enter into the USA. It won't be long before we, the middle class, will be wiped out if this is allowed to continue. The only person trying to stop this insanity and the violations of our Constitution that require legal immigration, legal citizenship, legal inspections, legal entry at ports of call. I've traveled in the world, and I can tell you, if you go to any other country, you're not getting in without inspections, without proper ID, and going through the legal ports of entry. If you do, you will end up either executed or jailed. So we're the only country in the world that is in violation of our United States constitutional laws, our sovereignty, and our legal citizenship laws, legal entry, legal inspections. And on top of that, the left wants to defund ICE and Border Patrol and get rid of them. So there you have it. America is under siege now. America is on the verge of either standing up and voting in the elections and hopefully voting for the GOP across the board before we no longer have a U.S. Constitution and we no longer have sovereignty, we no longer have a country. Well, God bless you. God bless America. Do your own homework. Do your own research. Come to your own conclusions. Don't believe me. Don't believe anybody. Do your own homework. Do your own research. Come to your own conclusions before it's too late.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.